Blog Talk Radio.
You on the debris at the Sunday morning market. You were starting to the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. And that old familiar love song. Gosh, you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. At the depot with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight, and they're not working.
Afternoon, Jason Leopold.
Hey, Tyson Cornell. How are you, buddy?
How you doing, brother?
What's going on?
Oh, man, just working like a dog. It's nice that it's cooled down a little bit, though, huh?
I know, man. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty.
Crazy.
I know, it was really, really nuts.
Hey, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Is there any way to get on a list for Bob Mould?
A list? What do you mean? Like on the guest list?
Is there a guest list?
Yeah, dude. Absolutely.
Would that be possible? And I'll buy a book to support the cause.
Don't worry about it, man. I got you covered. Don't worry about it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Right on, my brother.
All right, man. Yeah, don't worry about
Larry
that.
Larry Kane?
Yeah, let me, I'm going to mute myself, and then I'm going to dial out, and same as last
time. Okay, great.
All right, hold on a second.
Sounds good.
Hello.
Hey, Larry. Hello. How are you? It's Jason Leopold.
Jason, hold on 1 second. I'll be right there.
You got it.
Let me just close the door and we'll get going. Hold on a second.
You got it.
First of all, I have to tell you that
probably,
I would say, the amount of press inquiries has just dramatically increased since this news of the world business. Because although
I'll bet, yes.
Book, but
that is stunning.
Yeah, it is a connection. But I'm glad you did. You like the book?
I thought the book was great, and you know, I was looking at some of your older interviews, or I should say, the recent interviews you did you know, locally. I mean, I like journalism books, if you will, that, you know, even if it were nonfiction, you know, talking about sort of the state of the media. So while I really was engaged by the, you know, the story, you know, I felt it, you know, I immediately felt it, you know, represented what was happening today within the media, particularly on a local level. And in fact, that's sort of what I wanted to talk to you about, because the way I'm going to be putting this story together is using your book as an example of what's happening on the local level.
You have all your graphics, everything you need?
Yes.
If the organization is interested, I noticed
yes.
they do something with Bill Moyers.
Oh, yeah. Bill Moyers is one of our major supporters.
Okay, well, I would love to be a supporter as well, because I love the site. Okay.
Oh, well, thank you. And we'll be redesigning it to showcase the content better.
Well, what I'm saying is, if there's anything you guys want to do down the road, there will be a print edition out in 3 weeks.
Oh, no kidding. Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm doing well. I did it myself. I did it through the same style as I did. Did it through CreateSpace.
Right.
And it's also available through the distributors. If you want to do a promotion with it, I can get the book, either ebook or, well, the ebook I can't do much, but the print book, I can get it for you at a ridiculously low price.
I think we could do something like that.
Well, here's what I can get.
And I think everyone would be very happy to do that.
I'll tell you exactly the amount. I could get it for you at $3.90.
Wow, yeah, that's pretty cheap.
If you wanted to sell it for $12 or $13, you could make some
right.
good fundraising on it.
Basically give it away with a, since we're nonprofit, with a donation.
Well, here's the deal. I'll be very happy to give you the book at whatever it costs me. I think it's $3.70 or $3.90, and I
okay.
can actually have it shipped directly to you from me, as opposed to a middleman. And
right, right.
I don't really want anything extra for it. In other words, what
okay.
I'm saying, I have no profit motive. You can, I will
That's
put it
fantastic,
down.
That's fantastic, Larry.
As a contribution. And or you can just pay me for the shipping or whatever the cost of the book
yeah.
is going to be. And you can then sell it for $10 or $11.
That's fantastic. That would certainly
money.
Fit within our...
Well, let me know when you want to do it. And,
okay,
I
definitely will. I definitely will.
How long are we talking for?
About 15 minutes, if that's okay.
Perfect, that's perfect. When is this going to
okay.
go in the site, by the way?
I'm sorry?
When is everything going to go on the site?
I'm not sure. I hate giving like sort of a date, only because it's rare, as Tyson can probably attest, is that it's hard to stick to just because I juggle a bunch of stuff, but I'll,
right.
you know, I'll do my best to get it, you know, within the next couple of weeks.
That's great. Okay. And if you want to do a promotion on that, let me know.
I definitely will. No, we would love to do a promotion on it.
You call me. Let
and,
me know.
Okay. Sounds good. So, you know,
now,
what I wanted to...
you're going
to
do the interview in connection with the actual print piece on the site?
Yeah. You mean what we're doing right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm, you know, basically going to incorporate that into the overall story about, you know, the book and what it represents regarding, you know, the demise,
before,
if you will.
Before I forget, because I don't want to hold you up, anything you want to do promotionally with this book... I mean, what I can do is I've got to calculate the exact amount, but it's pretty low.
Right.
You could just give me the basic cost of the printing of it, maybe lower, maybe $3. And you,
okay.
you can sell it at, you know, for that's so that's how you get donations to the place, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's same thing sort of NPR does, you know, in a sense, or more or less that we
so you'll
have
let me
certain
know, I'll
titles.
Be very happy to help you.
Thank you, Larry.
I'll,
totally appreciate
right,
that.
I'm ready to go.
Okay, great. So, you know, the book obviously to me read as an indictment on local news, and certainly the competitive nature that exists among various local news outlets. I know you focus obviously on television, but I'm wondering if you see that existing within the print world as well, with regard to the urge to be first, to get the story first, and how that actually affects the content that's being published.
Well, it's kind of interesting because the print world today, Jason, as you know, is proliferated in many ways through online and through tweets and through Facebook, and it's, you know, the viral world can actually be more dangerous because if
right.
something in print is wrong, and by the way, it happens more in print than it does in local TV news, simply
yeah.
because they're covering more news. So what happens is if something is wrong in print or online, which is now really print, and some station picks it up and runs it, or an all-news radio station runs it, attributing it to that organization, that newspaper, they're really
right.
just as responsible for the screw-up. So,
yeah.
so basically, bad information in print is as dangerous as bad information in news. You know, we talked about what happened in England with the Murdoch Empire there. That obviously was deceitful, intentional kind of activity. What I talk about in this book is slimy, deceitful people who would rather be first with a story and wrong than second and right. And the thing about information and why it's so scary is that information has always been dangerous and risky business. And, you know, I'll give you an example that I have not talked to anybody about yet. Back in 1982,
okay.
which is a long time ago, I worked for WCAU-TV, Channel 10 in Philadelphia. And we had hired an investigative reporter, and he came back to us with a story that the mayor of Philadelphia had accepted a bribe. And I sat in a room, and I can't go into detail because I'm not allowed to by court order, and listened to some of the secondary sources on this story. And when I say I walked out of that room fairly convinced that the story was real, they still wouldn't give
right.
me the two primary sources. And they had the CBS lawyers there, and it was amazing. And we went on the air with the story, and it was not true. And
guess
who was sued? I was sued. It was Green versus Kane et al. Green versus Kane and CBS.
Right.
So it was really, I mean, you talk about the pain of going through the humiliation of something like that, knowing that the story was wrong, that somebody took us, that somebody connived to get us. And then the mayor sued, and the thing was resolved out of court, which I'm not allowed to talk about that either. But I will say this, that I learned way before this that bad information can hurt people. My biggest problem in that episode was I should have taken a walk around the block or gone home sick. But
yeah.
I'm not that kind of a person. Nevertheless, the entire CBS law department was shaken up. This is 30 years ago. And I have seen in my whole life, in my life aside from this, just what bad information can do, how risky it is.
Right. Well, you know, you brought up 1982. So obviously, you know, what you're talking about in the book, and I realize that there, you know, it may be drawn from, you know, some recent events. You know, 1982, almost 30 years ago. So this nature, this competitive nature, this, you know, if the local news world was sort of, you know, heading down that path, it's been happening for quite a while. I mean, what do you see as the difference between now, the state of local news, and then back in, you know,
well,
if you go back as far as back
into
1982?
Yeah, then being 1982 to 1990, then the audiences of local news, local TV news around the country in Los Angeles, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, the rest of the nation, were about 42% higher than they are now. And more people got their news from local news. Today, the audience is down 40%, but here's the real frightening aspect of it. Recent surveys by the FCC itself.
Wanted to talk to you about as well.
Independent surveys show that most Americans, and this is really frightening, get their primary news, most Americans, from local TV news. Okay, so
huh.
local TV news, think of the stats. If local TV news gives them their primary news on everything that's important that's happening in their lives, and, of course, the Internet is gigantic, we all know that, the web is gigantic, the viral nature of news is important. But if local TV news gives most people their news, and 40% of less people are watching it, That means that 40% less people are getting their news from local TV news. Where are they getting the news from at all?
Right.
And you're telling me that pocket news, I'm not saying you are, but if anybody's telling me that pocket news, the devices, are giving people what they need, they're full of it. It's not enough. And local news is not enough. It never has been. We need newspapers. We need websites like yours. We need in-depth reporting to get us into the issues. That's the reason that Americans elect their public officials on a visceral nature. They really
Right.
take very little time in seeking out the issues. That's why in 2000, Al Gore was not a very good candidate. Neither
yeah,
was
yeah.
Bush. We all know the outcome of how it happened. But think about it. In 2000, the visceral nature of that election helped Al Gore lose his own home state. He wins Tennessee, and that election is over. I mean, think about that, and think about the images we get in the electronic age, and we suddenly make these big decisions in our life based on how we feel about the person. Michelle Bachmann's case is a perfect example now. I don't know if you've heard about it, but as of today, she's ahead of Mitt Romney in Iowa.
Yeah.
And on the basis of one appearance in one pretty shoddy debate, okay, she's ahead of Mitt Romney, which doesn't say a lot for Mitt Romney, but also says, well, what's it all about? Is it all about the cosmetics of it, or is it all about the issues? How many people
right.
are really voting on the issues? So I think that when you look at local TV news, it's still a very important medium. And if local TV news is filled with nothing but crime, meaningless crime that's not going to change the world, and I'm not talking about big cases, what are they getting? By the way, I welcome any of your listeners or TV viewers around the nation to watch local TV news on the weekends. And I will guarantee you, I'll guarantee it, that 40 or 50% of the content of local TV news on the weekend is all crime all the time. And the reason for that is it's cheap to cover. Most stations have two crews available on a weekend, maybe three if they're lucky. So what do? They get a shooting here, they get a shooting there, they get a knife fight there, they get a drug arrest there. And it's easy to take it together and put it together like one of the old newsreels of yesteryear, because you don't have to spend a lot of money covering it issues. Never hope for any extensive coverage of the news unless there's God forbid, unless there's a 9/11 or an arrest of Bin Laden or a budget crunch that's coming down to the date of the debt ceiling, you know, a date with calamity or catastrophe. Never expect much from local news on the weekends. You will just not get it. It's not going to be there. It's going to be a mosaic and a montage of crime, and it's a mirage of the real news.
Well, you do, if I'm not mistaken, some consulting work for corporations such as Comcast, media conglomerates. How does companies such as Comcast and the consolidation of news, media organizations, media companies, affect the way we consumers receive their news, receive their information?
Well, it's hard to say because Comcast has been just taken over, you know, 4 or 5 months ago. NBC.
Right.
So basically it's kind of young in their career, but one thing they vowed to do, which is very important, under the former leadership, the NBC television stations were very void of great ones. There's one great one in L.A., KNBC, which had a great news director. I can't remember his name. His name was Long, I think. And the NBC stations have suffered because NBC robbed Peter to pay Paul when they had a struggling network and network prime time. So now they've hired a woman. Young lady from San Francisco named Valerie Staub, and she is going to run the NBC-owned stations, and I expect their ethics, their quality, and the extent of their news will improve. So it's early. Most of the consulting I do for Comcast/NBC is in the sports arena because that's all they really owned up until February. They have one regional news network called NECN, New England Cable News, out of Boston, which I've been working with for several years. That is a pleasure. That's a 24-hour news operation, and it's really good. And they really do politics, and they really do the news that people care, people really care about. What you have basically in local news today, and I know that Death by Deadline is a murder mystery, but you've read it, so you know what it's really all about, that basically what they're doing with news today is in all news operation, they're really taking advantage of the fact that they have the time to do it. And believe me, local newscasts in this country have the time to do it. Excuse me for one second here.
Sure.
Will you be able to edit okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I just got a little tickle. But basically,
no problem.
Basically, well, I also do a half-hour show called Voice of Reason, which is really
right.
The highlight of my career at this point of my career, because I can do a half hour and really discuss issues. And there's not enough of those programs around. And local TV news can do the job if it wants to. It's a matter of prioritizing what's important. But the fact is, when people do not have information, they can't act and they can't judge. And if you're just going out there to be super yellow, yellow being super tabloid, without any regard for real issues that, care, that people care about. I mean, you go and get surveys, and you'll find out that the one issue that's uncovered in American life today on local news is politics.
Right.
So here's the – now, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy, but here's the real story. And I did a column with John, hold on, I'm losing my mind here. I did a column with on Market Watch. John
oh,
Friedman.
Okay.
Yeah,
yes.
You read his column, I'm sure.
Yes, I know John Friedman well, actually.
John Friedman does a really good job, and basically he said, so what the hell is going on? I said, what's going on is that people do not cover politics in local news. They do what we call VO plenty. Okay?
Right.
VO plenty
yeah.
is you cover 20 seconds of a ribbon cutting at a congressional race in Southern California or Illinois, and that's your political coverage. You don't really look at the ads. You don't analyze the message. So you have this only minor titular section of politics during a big campaign, and then those same stations have the nerve to go out and sell people 30-second spots for $5,000. And you're telling me the system isn't corrupted or polluted? It's as
yeah.
simple as that. And by the way, the Democrats now do it as much as Republicans because they have to. So I
yes.
ask you the question. If local stations covered these races like they should, with in-depth coverage of the issues of each race, would there be a need for as much advertising? And the answer is no. So right now, political advertising defines the outcome of an election, not journalism.
Right. So it sounds like, which has been the criticism for quite some time, that the news business is very much a business and is being run like a business first and foremost.
There's nothing wrong with it. You have to, you know, having a profit is good because you'd be able to turn the money around and be better. Okay, the LA
Times. But is that affecting the way news is covered?
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that they – I'm not saying that anybody's in this as a conspiracy to destroy American minds. What I'm saying
right,
is –
right, I'm not suggesting that. I'm just suggesting that, you know,
if
you that
have a,
is –
if you have an issue like in Philadelphia, for example, where I live, just to give you an example, there's a tremendous violence problem in the schools, okay?
Right.
And it was uncovered, and it took a local newspaper to get it out there. There was a case of Asian students being attacked by African-American students at high school here, and the school district responded very poorly. There was a housing authority chief here that has since
right.
gone, that has been accused of so much ineptitude. It's extraordinary, and nobody covered in local TV news. And there's several hundred thousand people who depend on public housing here. I mean, you know, you just can go on and on and on. Police corruption, anything else like that. So you do have, there's a couple of great reporters in this town who do some investigations, but you don't have enough.
Right.
You don't have enough of activist reporting in local TV news. You don't have enough of 60 Minutes or Dateline or the kind of investigations that they do on CBS Sunday Morning. You just don't have that kind of stuff going on in local news. And tragically, people are watching this, and this is what they're getting. And they're horrible mistakes. In this book, there's a case of a young man arrested for a murder, and he was never charged, but his picture was shown over television, and then he gets killed. He gets murdered.
Right.
There are cases of, there was one episode in this book, and unfortunately, Jason, it really happened, and I fictionalized it because I wanted to show people just how bad it was, where a young man in a high school right here in this community, Springfield High School, shot up the lobby of the high school and then killed himself. And one of the stations in town reported that he had murdered three people, which was not true. The case happened at Springfield High School. There are four Springfields in the Philadelphia, South Jersey, Delaware area. Four Springfields, including another Springfield High School. Now, you hear this story on this, or you watch it on this television station, you think that maybe it affected, I would say that story affected 80,000 people. When you look about talk about the people who live in those communities, the teachers, their relatives, the students, their relatives, and all of a sudden you had this irresponsible station going crazy with bad information, I wonder how many heart attacks happened. I wonder how much anxiety was suffered. Sadly, it was one child who just killed himself, but it could have been worse. You had a case in Boston recently, I'm sure you've heard about this, where everybody fell for this one. There was a package being carried in by some guy who was a little odd into a shopping center in the Boston region. I can't remember exactly where, some sort of suburban Boston. And he walked into this place, and you know, it's like the party story that you tell to one person, and by the time it gets to the end, it's completely, completely distorted. And all of a sudden, they had a hostage situation at a Boston shopping center. Well, you know something? There was no hostage situation. There was no man holding up there. He was arrested promptly and investigated. There was no terrorist threat. And all of a sudden, the people of Boston were threatened because they felt there was a horrible hostage situation. Nobody bothered to check it out. It was a cyclone effect. Yeah. It just kept going and going and going. And you know something? It is amazing how these things happen. It just happens over and over again. And it's scary because the public safety can be affected.
Yeah. Well, you know, that brings me to one final question about the journalist. And do you see what do you see in terms of the makeup of journalists who are reporting these types of stories, such as the one that you just referenced? Are we ending up with journalists who are not trained very well? Are we ending up with journalists who just look good on television? How has that affected some of the way that stories are covered, particularly as in what you discuss in the book as well?
Well, as far as looks in journalism, have you ever seen a really gorgeous person on TV who became a great journalist? Yeah, a few. But what really works on TV, whether it be in L.A. or the world, is competence, and people know. It's nice for somebody to look good and be well-groomed, but the best anchors in America, I would have never made it if it was based on looks. The guy who I competed with and still is on, Jim Gardner, I mean, both of us are not exactly, I don't know, I don't think we'd ever appear on the cover of GQ. But if you look at the great anchors, you know, Brian Williams, a nice-looking guy, but he's got it inside. And, Diane Sawyer's got a lot of gravitas. So I think that when you really think about it, looks have very little to do with it. But I will say this. The industry is very errant in training what I call video kids, who are more concerned with the graphics and the pictures than they are with the who, what, when, where, why, and how. And that is a real problem in our industry. It's certainly Renegade in the Internet, not in your publication, of course, not at all, because you've got some very, very intense journalists there. But if you look at it, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, they're all pretty well staffed, regardless of your opinion of each place. They're pretty well staffed. But even there, you have lapses. And I think it's important that it all starts at the top. The management is
right.
Great. That important that people who are going to run these newsrooms are great. The majority of them, I'd say 50% of them are pretty good. And then you have the slimy types who care more about sensationalism than they do about reality. And then the audience, by the way, tragically, has a hard time differentiating between fact and opinion. For example, I cannot tell you, and this has nothing to do with my book, but I cannot tell you how many people will come to me and say, I heard Rachel Maddow say that this happened, or that Bill O'Reilly said this happened. Well, you know something? They're basically opinion shows. They're shows that give you
opinions. That's exactly what they are.
About issues. They're not news programs. They might deal with big issues in the news, and that's great that you can have debate like that. But they're not giving you the actual factoids of what happened. And, you know, people would say to me, and I'm not a big fan, but they would say that at all. But they say, Glenn Beck says, okay?
Right.
Glenn Beck says, all right? And you know,
right.
Glenn Beck said this happened, or Sean Hannity said this happened, or, Lawrence O'Donnell said this happened. Well, those are shows that are designed, you know, Chris Matthews, a pretty good friend of mine. Those are shows that are designed to provoke, to titillate, to bring debate, which is great.
Right.
They have to be labeled as what they are. They're not newscast. And that's another issue. You know, people have a hard time, even, you know, with England, with all the tabloid newspapers over there, which make our tabloids look very tame.
Yeah.
You look at a cover, and, you know, I'll tell you what was interesting. The New York Post had this incredible headline on DSK, Dominic Strauss-Kahn.
Right.
And, you know, with the sex crime in New York. And they called him a political perv, P-E-R-V.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know for sure. It's obvious he's got some issues, okay? But they called him a political perv. And then, of course, they called the Congressman Wiener a perv. And, you know, it's okay if you want to do tabloid. But let's learn a little bit about the story. In the case of Wiener, we've got a man with a lot of issues. In the case of DSK, we're not quite sure yet. But the freedom of that kind of language is something you have to be very careful of.
Sure. Well, that brings me then
Although
to the final question.
Both of them are political perbs. You know what I mean? I just don't know whether I'd say it that way. I don't see Truthout really ever doing
that. Yeah, that's not something that, you know, what we would call that link bait, which is, you know, you throw that into a headline and in an attempt to just try to get people to click the
story. Yeah, you look at your
site,
you look at the Wall Street Journal, you look at some of the conservative sites, and some of them, the thing to me is that if you're going to do opinion or a style that leans a certain way, do it
right.
with journalism.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Don't do it with 1932 style innuendo. And
right.
there's a tremendous difference between what you do in your arena and what a lot of other so-called liberal blogs do. And that's why you're
very conscious of that. We're very conscious of what's happening.
You know, there was a great headline, a great comment a news director once said to me. He said, if you're going to do commentary within the frame of a newscast, do it without fingerprints. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, David Broder could write that way. And, you know, the great writers of their time who were liberal could do it that way, and the great conservative writers could do it that way.
Right.
You know, I mean, without the venom and without the extremism of venom, it's okay to have passion, but it's nice to back it up with facts.
Right. Well, what can be done, Larry? I mean, how do we your book serves as a warning. It also suggests some sort of an awakening that needs to happen. Do you see things changing? Do you see the way news is covered in this regard?
I hope it changes because I'll tell you there's going to be less and less local news across the country. It should change
right.
because right now the big market stations are doing more and more news and they got plenty of time to do it. So I don't know why they're wasting their time on certain things. I think every station should have an investigative reporter. I think every station should have a what they used to call it at CBS, the Blue Book. I don't know if they use it anymore, which is a ethical standards book. I think that there should be a chain of command at every station where people are called when there's a gigantic story. I think we got to get over the weather aggravation business, the weather inflammatory weather forecast.
I mean,
you know, if you lived in a town where there's a lot of snow, you'd think 1 inch was going to be a blizzard, and nobody. And then it's like the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah,
you know, exploitation of weather in electronic journalism today on television is atrocious, just absolutely atrocious. Obviously, if you're going to have one of your Noah's Ark days in L.A., where you're going to get rain after rain after rain, that's a big story. But if you're going to get an inch of snow in Chicago, and you play it like it's the end of the world, all you're doing is upping the profits of grocery stores.
Well, Larry, Death by Deadline is an incredibly important book, a great read, and thanks so much for taking the time to write it and for speaking to me.
Thank you, Jason. 1 second before we go, let me know if you guys want to do this. The book will be out.
I definitely will. I'll contact our folks. We have I'm going to send your contact info to them. We have a totally an entirely separate group of people who deal specifically with this. So
I'd love to help them out, raise some money. There's no profit in it for me at this point. So let me know.
I definitely will. Thanks for making that offer.
Appreciate
it. Give
us a heads up on when this is going to be in, because I want to let people know.
I definitely will.
Tweet it in the whole package.
Count on it. Oh, are you
on
Twitter?
What's that? Oh, yeah, I'm on Twitter.
Oh, I'll have to look for you.
My name, Larry Kane. It's Larry Kane.
Okay, perfect. Going to go follow you now, Larry.
Totally transparent. Hey, I'll talk to you soon.
I'll talk to you soon. Thanks again. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Left you on a debris at the Sunday morning market. You were starting to the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. That old familiar love song. Gosh, you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. Trouble at the depot with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight, and they're not working.
left you on the day.